Thomas. Nanny said. She stood, her old rickety legs shaking under the weight of her roundness, as she hobbled over to the hall closet. She pulled out a white dress.
I made it for Kinsey to wear at the service.
Alani's eyes failed her, as tears flooded them.
It's beautiful. Thank you.
A horn blew outside, and Nanny said,
Oh, that's Mr. Larry. I'm going on down to the church for choir rehearsal, and when I see Pastor, I'll talk to him about the church helping to cover the funeral costs. God gonna make a way.
Alani offered a nod as she wiped her tears with the back of her hands. She didn't move from that spot. She sat there until the coffee in her cup ran cold, just staring at the phone and wringing her fingers. It was 8:05 a.m. He called, just like she knew he would, just like he had done every week for the past 2 years. It was the time that she would normally be getting Kenzie dressed for school. She let it ring twice, needing more time to figure out what she would say before she answered.
This is a call from the Michigan Department of Corrections.
Alani's mind spun as the automated voice spoke in her ear.
How do I tell him this? She thought. He's going to blame me. If this is my fault, I should have been home with him.
Bile built up in the back of her throat.
Hey, baby girl, your daddy misses you so much.
Alani's tears fell because she knew it was the last time he would ever say those words.
It's me, Cream.
She managed, the frog in her throat causing her words to come out deep and full of emotion.
Oh, hey, what?
He said, his voice full of surprise, almost hopeful, and she hated herself for filling him with optimism.
Hey, it's good to hear your voice. You know Daddy miss you too. You know that, right? I'm sorry for how...
Something's happened.
She interrupted.
Kenzie.
Kenzie what?
Cream asked, his voice now anxious and concerned.
She's gone. She was shot.
The words ran out of her mouth in a crescendo of panic.
You don't say that to me, La. This ain't funny. Don't say shit like that.
There was anger in his voice, but underneath it, she heard fear. He knew her well enough to know she wouldn't play about something like that.
Someone ran in the house looking for Lucas?
She shouted between her cries. She gripped the phone so tightly that her fingertips were numb.
She was here with him, and they shot her!
She wailed. She slid her back against the wall until her butt met the floor. Pulling her knees to her body, she buried her head into them.
My baby is gone!
Alani had never heard Cream cry in all the years she had known him, but the sound he made on the other end of the phone was nothing short of sobbing.
Where were you?
Cream asked.
Where was I?
She asked, her chest igniting with rage.
Where were you? I was at work, trying to make sure she had food in her stomach and warm clothes on her back. I can't be everywhere at once. I just needed a little help.
Alani cried. She was melting down, her shoulders shaking, as she cried into the phone.
Lucas was supposed to watch her. It's all my fault. I should have been there.
Her admission of guilt was so heavy that Cream backed down.
It's not your fault, La,
he said as he sniffed and cleared his throat. She could hear him trying to keep his composure.
I swear to God, I'm gonna murder the niggas responsible for this shit. It's over for niggas.
He was riding waves of emotion, going from rage to sadness in seconds as he tried to process this. He had called to say, I love you, not to hear this. Now he wished he could rewind time to moments before he hadn't known, when his world hadn't been rocked by this news that his brain couldn't process. It made no sense. In what land did little girls die behind some street beef? In the land of Flint, Michigan,
It happened every day, but Creamer never thought it would happen to him.
Niggas about to bury their moms, their kids, their fucking baby moms, yo. Whoever had anything to do with this gonna feel me.
You have 1 minute left. The automated operator had placed them on a countdown.
When is the funeral?
Cream asked.
I don't know. I can't afford it. I don't have insurance. Is she laying on a cold slab waiting for me, Cream? I don't have the money to bury her.
I'll see what I can do, La.
Alani sighed because she knew he wouldn't come through. He had been seeing what he could do for 2.5 years, and so far he hadn't done shit. She knew now was not the time she could chastise him because she couldn't do a damn thing either. Somewhere along the way, the two of them had failed as parents.
I'm so sorry. I love you, I do. Come see about me, La. I need to see you after some shit like this.
Click. Their time was up, and Alani closed her eyes, feeling even more hopeless than before. Chapter 10. Ethic walked into the funeral home, and he could smell the scent of death in the air. It had a distinct odor, one that reminded him that his time on Earth was borrowed. One day, he would have to pay it back. He only prayed it was no time soon. A woman greeted him, her eyes friendly, as she said,
"Good morning. How may I help you?"
Ethic removed a sealed envelope and placed it on a countertop in front of her.
"Alani Hill is a client of yours. Her daughter and her brother are awaiting burial here."
He began.
Yes, sir. But what's this?" the woman asked.
"It's $30,000. It should cover the expenses for both funerals,"
he replied.
"I'd like to donate it, anonymously."
"Oh, my Lord!"
the woman exclaimed as she placed a hand over her mouth in surprise. Tears came to the woman's eyes.
"You have no idea what a blessing you'll be to this young woman. She's been in here crying her eyes out, just thinking she would not be able to pull this off. You're an angel, young man."
I wish that were so,"
Ethic answered.
"Just make sure she gets this."
"God bless you,"
the woman said, emotional. He turned his back and walked out of the establishment, knowing that her words couldn't be farther from the truth. He was nobody's blessing. He was Alani's curse, and the money didn't erase that. Morgan flipped through the pictures on her phone, frantically, as her heart filled with jealousy.
"This bitch is with Messiah now?"
she thought, as she scoured through Nisha's social media page to see the evidence of disloyalty right before her eyes. Morgan's chest burned with a scorn so great it made tears come to her eyes. Nisha was her girl, her ace, the only person who had befriended her, despite her disability. Since they had been in elementary school, Nisha had been by her side.
"She knew I was feeling him,"
Morgan thought bitterly. It was just another loss that the poor little deaf girl had to take. A man like Messiah could truly never want her. He would never choose her over a regular girl like Nisha, no matter how beautiful she was. Morgan felt like an abnormality, and her chest swelled with angst, as she realized she was never going to be a man's choice. Being deaf made people pity her. She walked around in a constant state of misunderstanding, desperately wishing she could connect with someone, anyone. She had found that connection with Messiah. He had felt her, despite the silence that existed between them. He had found the rhythm of her heartbeat, and she thought it meant something.
"Nobody will ever want me like this,"
she thought. She didn't know who she was angry with, Nisha or Messiah. Seeing them together burned like betrayal. Nisha was her best friend. They hadn't spoken since she had been raped at the motel. Morgan had kept her distance, feeling like Nisha had left her there, vulnerable and afraid. Now this. Morgan had wanted to give her friend the benefit of the doubt, but she was lacking benefit and full-on doubt. Morgan wanted to blame Nisha's actions that night on drugs and alcohol. Perhaps Nisha had just been afraid and was too intimidated to stop Lucas and his friend. That's what Morgan had tried to tell herself, but in the back of her mind she knew. Nisha was a jealous bitch, Seeing her in pictures with Messiah had confirmed it. Nish was shady, and Morgan was finally seeing the light. No, Messiah wasn't Morgan's man, but based on principle alone, Nish should have steered clear of him. Morgan reached out for her medical paperwork on the nightstand as she scoured over the details. They had been sitting there, collecting dust, because Morgan was afraid. Afraid to be like everyone else, afraid it would hurt, afraid to get her hopes up, only to have the procedure fail. Morgan had been deaf all of her life. She didn't know how the world would be once she could hear. But after losing Messiah, she no longer wanted to be who she was. Experimental or not, Morgan was ready to take the risk. She wanted to tell herself that her decision had nothing to do with Messiah. He was just a guy, and she was smarter than to make a drastic choice based on the likes of someone else. Right? Wrong. Morgan was doing exactly that. She just wanted to be someone Messiah could love, someone less complicated, less unique, less handicapped. Morgan craved regularity, despite that she was anything but. Morgan pressed the heart underneath Nisha's photograph, letting it be known that she had seen it. Like clockwork, Nisha's name appeared on her screen.
Psst, you couldn't be bothered to reach out after you left me at the hotel? But you're texting now?
Morgan thought. A guilty conscience would reveal itself in time. Bestie.
Hey, boo! I have so much to catch you up on. My bad about being MIA. Shit been crazy.
Morgan rolled her eyes as her fingers went to work at a rapid response.
Yeah, I see you've been busy. You and Messiah? Side eye.
There was a long pause as Morgan waited for Nisha's response. The text bubbles on her iPhone screen kept appearing and disappearing as Morgan smirked.
Dirty bitch,
Morgan thought, knowing that Nish was fishing for an explanation. Bestie.
I know. I've been meaning to tell you. It's crazy. We always said we were gonna snag us some legit niggas. His homeboy been asking about you, too. I hope you're not feeling the type of way about us. I know you used to have a little crush on him, but that's little girl shit. We grown women now. You're my girl. I don't want no little shit coming between us.
Morgan was livid. She knew Nish was trying to downplay her treachery by belittling Morgan's affections for Messiah.
Or am I overreacting? He wasn't my man. I never even told her about spending time with him at the falls, and I haven't even seen her since the motel. She knew I liked him. But who doesn't like him? Every girl in the city had him on their radar.
She thought. Morgan was jealous and angry. But she wasn't entirely sure she had the right to be. So instead of starting conflict, she conceded.
I'm good. Messiah isn't my issue with you. What happened to you that night? Those niggas did me dirty, and you just disappeared.
Bestie.
I'm so sorry, girl. I honestly didn't think it was that big of a deal. I was high as hell and just out of it. I wasn't thinking straight. Let's link up. Have lunch. I miss you, and I want to make it up to you for leaving you by yourself that night. Meet me at the hibachi spot in half an hour.
Morgan sighed. She wanted to see Nish face to face, to look her in the eyes, to see if she could sense bullshit or sincerity. Morgan snatched up her handbag and car keys before rushing down the stairs and out the door. A part of her wanted to declare war on her best friend, but she knew she couldn't. If Messiah had chosen Nish, who was Morgan to hate? Sitting at the 5-star hibachi spot, Morgan's leg bounced impatiently. It had taken her a half an hour to get to the restaurant, so Nish should have beaten her there. The tardiness added insult to injury. Nish was over an hour late, and Morgan was beyond perturbed. Just as she reached for her handbag across from her seat, Nish came strolling into the restaurant with Messiah behind her. His head was down as his fingers moved swiftly across his phone screen. Morgan's heart sank like the Titanic.
He was here with Nish, in all his Versace-wearing, freshly twisted locks having glory, and Morgan was mortified.
When he lifted his eyes, she saw surprise flash in him briefly. Her presence was unexpected, she could tell. He quickly erased the emotion from his face and took a seat. Morgan only sat because her legs were no longer strong enough to hold her up. So sorry we late. Niche signed. Niche was beaming. Messiah had bossed her all the way up. Her normal H&M threads were replaced with labels of her own. Her hair and makeup were professionally done, causing Morgan to wish she had taken time to perfect herself before leaving the house. Niche had come to stun on her, and Morgan was burning with jealousy. She had no emotion about the things Messiah brought Niche. It was the time he gave her that made Morgan sick. Morgan's stomach was in turmoil as she gave Niche a half-hearted smile. Her eyes stung with tears as she avoided looking at Messiah altogether.
I'm sorry, too.
Morgan sighed.
I actually have to go. I thought this was going to be a quick lunch. I promise Ethic I pick Easy and Bella up from school.
She had no shame in lying, because if she sat there too long, the levee that contained her tears would break. The last thing she needed was to embarrass herself, yet again, in front of Messiah. She wouldn't give either of them the satisfaction of seeing her cry.
I'll text you later.
She got up and snatched her purse out of the seat next to her before storming out of the restaurant. It took everything in Messiah not to go after Morgan. This was his purpose of having Niche around in the first place. Making Morgan hate him would stop him from crossing a dangerous line with one another. He hadn't intended on throwing it in Morgan's face. He wasn't even feeling Niche to put claims on her. He upgraded her because he couldn't have a chick of her stature even speaking his name. He let her take her social media flicks and imply that they were together because he intended to turn Morgan off. Meanwhile, his page was dry of any female. Most of the time, they never saw the outside of his trap house. But today, she had claimed to be starving and convinced him to take her out to lunch.
Yo, get your ass up,
Messiah said as he stood.
We aren't eating?
Niche asked.
Nah, fuck that. You on some goofy shit right now,
Messiah chastised as he walked out. Seeing how his presence had affected Morgan had put him in a sour mood. He wasn't trying to embarrass her, only deter her interest so that he could respect Ethic's wishes. Morgan sat outside Bella and Easy's elementary school, watching as kids ran across the front lawn, their voices carrying through the air as they stretched their legs after sitting in a classroom all day. Her solemn mood was instantly lifted when she saw Bella walking with her hand clasping Easy's as they approached the car. It reminded her of her sister Raven. She once had a big sister to hold her hand, too, a long time ago.
More money!
Easy shouted when he saw her, letting Bella go, only rushing into Morgan's arms.
Hey, Mo! I thought Lily was picking us up.
Bella signed.
I gave her a break today.
Morgan signed back. Morgan and Bella had always been close since the first day they had met. Their sisterhood was phenomenal. They each craved a feminine alliance in their lives. Motherless girls, they needed someone they could trust, and they found that in one another. Morgan was sure nobody loved her more than Bella. Bella and Easy were the only people in the world who didn't look at her through sympathy-filled eyes.
Can we rock out at the mall?
Bella asked. Her sign language was effortless at this point, Easy's too. They lived in a bilingual household, and while other people saw it as a handicap, Easy and Bella always saw it as a superpower. It was like they spoke in a code that only very few could understand.
Not today, B. I want to ask you guys something.
Morgan signed.
What's wrong?
Bella asked. Morgan eased her worries.
Nothing is wrong. I just need your opinion. What do you think about me getting a surgery to restore my hearing? Do you think it'll make me normal?
But you're already normal.
Easy cut in. Morgan smiled because she knew he meant it.
Thanks, Easy.
Morgan sighed.
You're the best. You know that?
He smiled and quickly removed his iPad from his backpack. It was just that easy of a decision to him. She was Mo Money, his aunt, but more like a sister. He loved her without alteration. She wished she could see herself through his eyes. He zoned out as Morgan turned to Bella.
He's right, you know.
Bella sighed.
You're already normal, Mo. You don't have to fix yourself because nothing's broken. You're the coolest chick I know. I wish my dad looked at me the way he looks at you. You can do no wrong.
Morgan gave a weak smile. Validation from them wasn't enough to make her feel secure. They were only kids, and although Bella was starting to grow up, she was biased. They were her family and couldn't see the flaws that the world would magnify.
I thought you liked the fact that you could block out the world.
Bella sighed. Now, I just want to be a part of it. Morgan sighed back. She started the car and put her hand on the gear shift. She felt Bella's hand on top of hers, and she looked up at her.
I love you. We all do,
Bella said. I know. Morgan sighed back. She placed her hand over her heart and gave Bella a wink before pulling off. She had an important decision to make. She wanted to believe that she was motivated by the right reasons, but only one reason came to mind. Messiah. This was about a boy. This was about her best friend getting the guy, not because she was cuter or smarter or better, but because she could hear. For once in her life, she wanted someone to not only be fascinated by her, but to choose her. She headed straight to Ethic's shop. She knew she would find him there, under the hood of a car, putting in work for no reason because he didn't need the money at all. He had gone into every shop every day since her rape. And she felt like he couldn't even look her in the eyes anymore. When they arrived, she hopped out of the car, taking the brochures for the procedure out of her hobo bag, rushing into the shop with Easy and Bella in tow.
Daddy!
Easy yelled in excitement as soon as he saw Ethic leaning over the engine of the old-school Buick. Ethic's brow was bent in focus and instantly relaxed when he looked up and saw his baby boy. Every time he saw Easy's face, he thought of Raven, and his heart healed momentarily, only to break all over again at the fact that she was gone. Easy had been the thing that kept him breathing after her death, but he was also the thing that kept him haunted the most. Raven Atkins lived through her son. That much she was sure of. Easy barreled into him, hugging him so hard that Ethic stumbled backward from the impact.
Hey, what you doing here, big man? How was school?
Ethic asked.
Good!
Easy shouted as he ran by his father and into the lobby where the arcade game was sitting vacant. Ethic chuckled and shook his head as he saw Morgan and Bella approaching. They were too cool to run into him. Like the princesses they were, they made him wait, strolling slowly until they stood before him. Ethic kissed their foreheads.
And to what do I owe this visit?
Ethic sighed.
How much is it going to cost me?
Morgan turned to Bella.
Can you keep an eye on Easy while I talk to Ethic?
Bella nodded and did as she was told. Ethic frowned. This was serious. He could tell by the weary look on Morgan's face.
I want the surgery.
Morgan sighed. Ethic grabbed a towel and wiped the oil from his hands as he gave her his full attention.
You sure? You thought about this?
He asked.
I have, and I'm positive.
She answered. She looked at her hands.
I'm tired of these being my voice. I just want to speak my mind, like everybody else.
Morgan sighed. Ethic nodded and released a heavy sigh.
I'll call and make the appointment tomorrow morning.
He sighed. He noticed the tears that gathered in her eyes and pulled her in for an embrace. Kissing the top of her head, he sighed. Morgan had insecurities that he didn't even know how to eradicate. He had given her the love a father would for his daughter, and still, it didn't seem to be enough. He only hoped that this would be the thing to top off her confidence and get her to realize that she was enough. She was the last of a legendary tribe, and that made her special. Hearing or deaf, she was a marvelous soul. But if this is what she wanted, he would give it to her, because he could never deny her of anything. Chapter 11 Alani wasn't one to beg, but as she sat in the front row of the church, she knew she had no choice but to accept the donations from the congregation. She was appreciative for their generosity. They barely knew her. They saw her face on Easter and on New Year's Eve. The rest of the year, she was missing in action. She doubted if anyone in the pews even knew her name. That's how inactive she was. She watched the members rise from their seats to donate to the basket sitting next to her daughter and brother's pictures. It made her feel so loved. She had never understood the purpose of church. She believed her relationship with God was personal, that she could be spiritual without subscribing to the expectations that man put on religion. But seeing the support that she was receiving made her understand the purpose of the church.
They treated me like family. And some of them can't even keep a roof over their own heads. And they're giving to me so freely.
She thought, wiping the tears from her face. She was so overwhelmed that all she could do was grip Nanny's hand.
Church, give from your heart. This young mother must bury her brother, bury her dear daughter. Let's wrap our arms around her, Mount Pisgah. Let's lift her up. Let's renew her spirit and let her know that in the darkest time, the devil will not win. Give from your heart, church.
Alani's chest heaved. She was crying so hard. She was so sick of crying, so damn exhausted from wailing every day, all day.
Why can't I just stop?
She thought. The wails just kept coming from the pits of her, from the bottoms of her, that she didn't know she could carry hurt. That shit was spilling out of her. Nobody but a mother who had ever lost a child could ever relate. She had ripped herself open to give birth to that baby girl, and she had been robbed of a lifetime of unconditional love. She was not only shattered, she was mad as fucking hell. She wanted justice. What type of monster would kill a kid, she thought.
We have a representative from the funeral home who would like to say a few words.
The pastor announced. Alani looked up to see Mr. Masters walking down the aisle. He took the mic and looked at her.
Mrs. Hill, we at Master's Funeral Home would like to extend our deepest condolences. We are so very sorry for your loss. A generous benefactor, anonymously, donated $30,000 to go toward the burials of your loved ones, and we would like to present this check to you and your family.
Alani bent over, her head falling between her knees, as Nanny rubbed her back gently. She had never understood the mystery of God. For days, she had stressed about how she would lay her family to rest. And out of nowhere, things had worked out. She stood to her feet and hugged the pastor. He handed her the microphone. She was too emotional to speak. She stood up there, lip quivering, snot leaking, mascara running, as she lowered her head and just let herself cry.
Thank you so much,
was all she could manage, before the mothers of the church came and wrapped their arms around her. It was only their support that kept her standing, not because she was naturally weak, but because life had gotten so hard that it depleted her energy. Nanny escorted her to the pastor's office, where Mr. Masters presented her with the check.
Who would be this generous? I have to thank them,
she said, as she covered her mouth with one hand and held the check with the other.
Thank all of you.
Now, I can't give away the identity of a man who donated this out of respect for his privacy. We can help you finish arrangements whenever you're ready,
Mr. Masters said. Alani stood to leave and hugged Nanny.
I'm ready now. My baby's been waiting for me for so long. Let's do it right now, she said.
All right, you can meet me over at the funeral home,
Mr. Masters said. Alani nodded as she turned to Nanny.
I'll see you at home. I love you, old lady.
I got you, old lady, Nanny responded with a smile as Alani made her exit. Alani checked her watch, knowing that the next bus was coming soon. She still had to pick up her car. She would need it to run the errands needed to plan two funerals. Normally, shame would fill her as she stepped onto the city bus. Flint wasn't the public transportation type of city. You had to be down on your knuckles to even consider utilizing the bus. But today, she didn't care. She looked how she felt, and there was no point in fronting for anyone, like she was okay. In fact, Alani wasn't sure if she would ever be okay again, and she just didn't have the energy to put up a visage. She dug the change out of the bottom of her purse and paid for her ticket, then took the first seat she saw. She rested her head against the window as she watched the dilapidated city pass her by. She was tired of Flint. Every day, it was a different story of tragedy. Niggas killing, robbing, raping, scamming. When she was coming up, Flint wasn't so bad. It was a hype little city where everybody knew everybody. The most you would see was a good old-fashioned fight after the city school basketball games. It was ruthless now. So many things had changed. So many jobs it left. Too many babies deserted, too many crack pipes smoked, It was a lawless place, and niggas didn't live by any type of code anymore. Women and children were being killed off every day. Young black boys gunned down over the most trivial things every single day. Her daughter had been a victim of circumstance, and Alani would carry that guilt for the rest of her life.
Should have gotten up out of here a long time ago,
she thought. She had been so busy chasing behind Cream that she had given up on her own dreams. Her potential to contribute something worthy to society had been immeasurable. She had been smart. She could have gone to college and made something of herself. It had been expected, but loving the wrong man had distracted her, and she had become stuck. Her choices led her here. Her thoughts plagued her all the way to her stop, and she shook them off as she hopped off. The bank was right up the block from Ethic's shop, and she headed there first. After cashing the check, she hurried to try to catch him before it was closing time. She was eager to pay her debt to him, and even more zealous to see him. She could only imagine what he must think of her. She had damn near prostituted herself to a man right in front of him. She practically ran down half the block as she rushed to get there. She was winded when she stopped inside the shop. The closed sign was in the window, and it was empty. But Ethic's Range Rover sat in a parking lot, so she knew he was there.
Hello?
She called out. She peeked into the back office, and then into the bays in the attached garage.
Hello?
She repeated. She stepped into the garage, her heels clicking against the concrete floor, as she tiptoed down each bay, maneuvering around cars until she spotted hers. She walked over to it and found a set of legs hanging beneath it. It was Ethic. Even though his upper body was hidden beneath her car, she could feel his presence. There was something about him that felt powerful, kingly, as if he was meant to dominate. She bent down atop his wheat-colored Timberland boot. He lifted his head slightly to peek up at her, and she flattened her lips in a straight line as she waved. Ethic rolled from beneath the car and sat up, before pulling up a pair of wireless Beats from his ears.
Hi,
was all she could think to say.
I've come to settle my debts.
She stood to her feet and pulled out a wad of money.
Yeah, I told you. It was on the house.
He responded. His tone was different, less approachable than it had been the first time she had been in his presence. He dusted himself off, wiping his hands on the towel as he stood to his feet. He brushed by her, headed back toward the lobby.
Let me grab your keys. You can be on your way.
She frowned. He was cold. Something had happened. Something had shifted.
Oh, okay,
she said. What else could she say? She couldn't tell him that the only time in the past week that she had smiled had been in his presence. She couldn't tell him that the hug he had given her had made her feel the safest she had felt in years. This man in front of her was all business. He wasn't the caring guy she had gone to the movies with.
Maybe he thinks I'm a hoe.
He had time to think about what happened at my job. He handed her the keys.
Thanks. Have a good night, she said.
You too,
he replied. It was all so formal, so sterile. Like a business exchange, and technically it was, but she wished he could have given her a little bit more of what he had given her the other day. He had poured into her that day. Today, he acted like he didn't even know her. His eyes were full of gray clouds as a storm brewed behind his stare. There was something dark within him, and it made him standoffish. She turned to leave, making it all the way out the door, before she stalled. She was looking for an excuse to prolong her presence there.
You caught me in a desperate place the other day. I don't do that. I've never done that.
She had one hand on the door and was facing it as she spoke. She didn't want to turn around and face him because he had to be judging her. That's where this change in mood had come from. He had formed an opinion of her, and it wasn't a good one. At least that's what she assumed.
You said that before. You don't have to repeat yourself. I believe you.
Ethic replied.
Then why are you treating me like...
She didn't know how to finish her sentence.
Like...
She was at a loss for words.
a customer?
He finished. Yes, she shouted. She knew she sounded ridiculous. This man just fixed your car. He was being nice the other day. He ain't responsible for making your life feel less fucked up than it was, she thought. She blew out a deep breath and tucked her hair behind her ear as she closed her eyes. You know what? I'm sorry. I don't know what the hell I'm doing right now. Have a good night. She was halfway to the door when she stopped again, pulling the wad of money out of her bag and turning around to place it on a countertop. I'd rather pay. She stormed off, opening the door, only for Ethic to come up behind her and push it closed. She turned towards him.
I have to treat you like a customer, Alani. Because if I don't, I start to wonder what you taste like.
His words were so frank and so erotic that it made her quiver. He was standing so close that she could smell the scent of his sweet breath mixed with his cologne.
My mind wandering out of the shit that men think about when they find a woman they want to conquer. And I'm all man, Alani. Since you walked in here the other day with those sad eyes and those painted orange jeans, I've been thinking some shit that I shouldn't be thinking about you. I have my reasons why I can't take it there. In the perfect world, you would have never walked into this shop. And the fucking odds that you came in here on the one day. I've been in here all month.
Ethic stopped and shook his head. His forearm stretched past his head, and his hands rested on the door, trapping her in between him and it. It was a prison that Alani welcomed. She pulled her bottom lip between her teeth as he stared intensely at her, through her, directly into her soul. Damn, how did he do that? He made her feel something other than devastation. He saw more than the wreckage she had transformed into. This was a feeling that she wanted him to provide when she first walked in.
You and that lip,
he said, noticing. He noticed everything about her. It was how he had known she needed rescuing from her boss the other night. He had noticed. He picked up on things that others didn't take the time to dissect. This mysterious midnight-colored gangster was intuitive and a beautiful distraction from her real life. He had switched her focus from grief with ease, but as soon as he took back his presence, the gift of diversion disappeared with him. That's why she was there, stalling, delaying the moment when she would have to walk out the door.
You want me to fuck your pain away. And under different circumstances, I would oblige you because you're lovely as fuck. But that's not possible. I would just pile more hurt on you. You're not crazy. We had a smooth time the other night, and normally that would lead to something else, but this is a dead end. That's why I'm treating you like a customer. I'm not the man you think I am. I'm not the good guy in your story.
He opened the door and stepped aside as he waited for her to exit, but she just stood there, looking up at him.
Good night, Alani.
Alani walked out. She couldn't get inside her car quickly enough. Embarrassed, confused, and rejected, she pulled off into the night. She didn't know why she was angry. She didn't know Ethic. They were merely strangers passing through each other's lives, and according to Ethic, that's how it would stay. Morgan drew in a sharp breath as she tried to calm her racing heart. She was nervous as she waited for the doctor to come inside the room. Her mind raced. What if it doesn't work? She thought. Ethic sat across from her. He was so serious as he rested his elbows against his knees, fingers in the steeple under his chin, brows dipped low. He was thinking, probably about all the what-ifs that were haunting Morgan as well. Despite his silence, she was glad he came. She was grateful he had done the research to even give her the option to correct her hearing in the first place.
You don't have to stay.
Morgan signed.
I mean, there's no point in you waiting while I'm in surgery.
I'm not going anywhere.
Ethic signed back.
What about Easy and Bella?
She asked.
They know how important today is for you. They're at home with Lily. They're fine. Our focus is on you right now.
Ethic answered.
Are you ready?
Before she could answer, her doctor came into the room.
Hi, I'm Dr. Hamady. You must be Morgan, and you are...
Ezra, Okafor.
Ethic said, as he stuck his hand out for a shake.
I'm her family.
Nice to meet you,
the doctor said, as he pulled out a stool and took a seat.
Now I've reviewed your medical history, and I think you're a good candidate for this procedure. A cochlear implant will stimulate your dormant nerves inside your inner ear and help you sense sound. I must ask, why haven't you considered this treatment before? You're 18, you could have had your hearing restored years ago.
Well, my parents died when I was young, and Ethic raised me. He always offered me different options to find out if my hearing could be restored, but I never wanted to. I was scared and young. So many of the procedures were new and required a lot of time out of school for therapy. I'm old enough now to decide this is what I want. She signed.
Okay, well, technology has brought us quite far in hearing restoration. The downtime is 3 to 6 weeks, and you aren't really down at all, just managing pain. I will not activate the implants until after that time, so you'll still be signing to communicate for a few weeks.
How much pain will I be in?
Morgan signed.
Oh, nothing a prescription of Tylenol 800 won't alleviate.
The doctor assured.
I'm going to take great care of you.
The doctor promised.
I'm going to get the nurses in here to prep you for surgery, measure your ears, and grab your vitals. They'll give you Xanax to take the anxiety away, and it'll probably make you a little groggy. You won't even realize you're going into surgery in the morning. It's the good stuff.
The doctor signed with a wink.
You'll spend the night here, and in the morning, we'll change your life. How does that sound?
Long overdue, she signed.
The doctor left the room as two nurses came in carrying a hospital gown, a small pill, and a cup of water. She placed the pill on her tongue and swallowed it down quickly and took the gown into the adjoining bathroom. She changed quickly and made herself comfortable under the covers before turning to Ethic.
Thank you,
she signed.
I love you, Mo.
Ethic signed back. His phone vibrated on his hip, and he looked down, noticing a notification from Messiah's text message. Messiah. 911. Ethic knew Messiah wouldn't even hit his line unless it was necessary. Ethic's fingers quickly typed a reply.
I'm at Hurley. Can't leave. Pull up. Room 714.
Ethic looked over at Morgan, who had closed her eyes. He hoped he was making the right decision regarding her. He hoped she knew that he had done the best he could do to care for her over the years. He didn't know what had motivated the sudden change and her desire to go through with the surgery, but he would support her through it all. Within the hour, Messiah was knocking on the door, and Ethic stood and opened the door to step into the hallway. Messiah caught a glimpse of Morgan, sleeping inside the room, and his stomach dropped. He froze as worry seized him.
Everything good?
He asked. Ethic squeezed the bridge of his nose as he replied.
She's having surgery in the morning to restore her hearing.
Messiah's gut twisted in concern. He wanted to ask more questions, but to show too much interest would be disrespectful.
Damn,
was all he could manage.
What's the emergency?
Ethic asked.
A nigga named Cream. Well, to put the word out that he got bread on whoever hit Lucas and the little girl. He's a father. He on lockup up north. Rumor has it. He coming home soon. And the nigga ain't happy.
Messiah informed.
Cream who?
Ethic dug.
Cream Richardson. Niggas from around the way call him Killer Cream. Some corny shit about him leaving niggas circled in chalk. He from Merrillhood. He was getting a little money, and he was found out. Nothing major, but I heard he's solid. He got a couple of bodies on him, but he ain't go down for that. He got a bullshit charge. He talking big, though. You know how I want to handle it. Give a nigga his wings as soon as he get his freedom.
Messiah whispered in a low tone. Ethic immediately thought of Alani. She had buried enough people. He didn't want to be responsible for putting her child's father in the ground, too.
He let the nigga breathe, for now,
Ethic stated. Messiah nodded and backpedaled from the room.
Hey, you said it. That's law,
Messiah replied.
Yo, she good?
Messiah couldn't help but ask. He had resisted the urge to text her after the debacle that had happened at the restaurant. He wanted to explain. He wanted to tell her that Nish was nobody to him, but he couldn't, because he would have to admit that Morgan was somebody to him, and he wouldn't cross that line. Ethic looked back, peering inside the glass rectangle on the door.
She will be,
Ethic stated.
Hey, keep your ears to the street, and let me know if shit get tense.
Morgan's eyes fluttered open, and she tried to fight the haze the anesthesia had her captured under. Her entire body was freezing, and she shivered as she closed her eyes once more, giving her that wonderful feeling that kept pulling her back into dreamland. She opened them again and noticed Bella first, then Easy and Ethic. She could feel the implants beneath the skin behind her ears. It felt odd, heavy. She wondered if they were noticeable. Morgan was floating, and so out of it that she couldn't do anything but lay her head back. She felt Ethic's hands on hers, and she gave him a small squeeze before slipping back into a deep sleep. Ethic turned to the door. Dr. Hammity walked in.
She'll be out for a while, but you can take her home as soon as she wakes up fully and is aware of her surroundings. She did well. The nerves responded beautifully to the implants, and in a few weeks she can come in and we'll activate them and witness technology at work as she hears your voices for the first time.
Ethic shook the man's hand and felt a weight lift from his chest as tears clouded his eyes. There was only one person he could share this with.
All right, grab your jackets, guys. Let's roll. I'm going to drop you at home with Miss Lily.
But we want to stay,
Bella informed.
It's going to be hours before Mo wakes up. You guys have school tomorrow,
Ethic said.
And don't worry, she'll be home soon.
He escorted the children to his truck and quickly dropped them off at home with his nanny. He had somewhere he needed to be, and he couldn't get there fast enough. It was a beautiful day. The sky was like sapphires, blue and clear, with beautiful billowy white clouds floating by. The wind blew gently, kissing Alani's face, and the birds chirped a jovial tune. It looked like a scene out of a fairy tale, as if someone had illustrated a page out of the happiest storybook in the world. It was much too pretty a day for the task at hand. Alani was burying two people that she loved today. On the inside, there was a storm plaguing her. Alani stood in front of two caskets, her high heels sinking into the green grass, as the pastor gave a short sermon. She had chosen to eulogize her brother and daughter outside at the gravesite because she wasn't sure if she could survive a full service in a church. She was numb as she stood there. She couldn't even cry anymore. She couldn't release one more tear because she had cried them all out. She felt like she was standing there, outside of herself, having an out-of-body experience as everyone around her broke down. She couldn't tear her eyes away from Kenzie. She was so pretty, just lying there, as if she was only asleep. It felt like it was a sin to put something so pretty in the dirt. It was hard for her to tear her eyes away from her angel, but when she saw the police car pull up and a handcuffed Cream exit from the back of the vehicle, she desperately wanted to see him. He was the only person present who could understand what she was going through. Two officers escorted him over to the cemetery, and Alani stepped up to the casket, meeting him there. She gripped the edge of the metal box, and he placed a shackled hand over hers.
I'm going to handle it,
he whispered. He leaned and kissed the side of Alani's head, inhaling her scent. She let him, because she knew it brought him comfort. Who was she to deprive him of comfort on such a hard day?
She wished it was as easy for her to attain.
And no touching.
The officer behind him reminded. Alani leaned down over the casket and kissed her daughter's forehead. Her skin felt cold, clammy, like clay, like an object that had never breathed or lived or laughed before. The color of her cinnamon skin was faded and dingy, like a trifling mama who had washed the colored clothes on hot. This little body was not her little girl. The sight of death in front of her tore her up inside.
I love you, baby. Mommy loves you so much.
Yeah, I spoke to a lawyer. I'm gonna be out of here in 6 months on good behavior. And when I touch it down, nigga's gonna answer for this.
He whispered.
That's my word.
He sniffed a tear and snuck one last kiss, planting one on her cheek, before he was escorted away. When the pastor lowered the lid on the casket, her numbness melted away, and her emotions were so crippling that she couldn't stand. She sat in the front row, sobbing, her head buried in her hands until it was over. As everyone walked away, she sat there.
Baby?
We got to go. People will expect to see you at the repass.
Nanny said.
I can't leave her. Just go ahead of me. I need a moment alone with her. I can meet you back at the church.
Alani said.
Okay, baby.
Nanny replied, sorrowfully, before walking away. Ethic walked through the cemetery, carrying fresh long-stem roses as he searched for Raven's grave. He sat down on the grass as he placed the bouquet on her headstone.
I miss you, Mom,
he whispered as he bent on his knees, resting his elbows on top of them as he clasped his hands together. He bowed his head as his eyes burned. He felt her loss all over again each time he visited. He had thought wounds healed over time, but this type never stopped bleeding. The same sharp pain dwelled within his chest every day, never letting up.
Mo is gonna hear. After all this time, she's gonna be able to speak and hear and laugh. She's gonna be all right. I know you wanted that for her. Your wants are my wants, love. I tried to do right by her, by you. I wish you could see her. She's beautiful. And she looks just like you, I mean... You shine through Easy so brightly that I forget he never got to know you. And even Bella still remembers you. She prays for you every night. She likes to think you and her mother are friends and watching out for her. That we're just floating down here, Ray. It's hard without you keeping us grounded. To build a home with. A life with. I'm lost, Raven.
He stood and sniffed away the tears that never fell. The sound of crying caught his attention, and he turned around. All he saw were tombstones, but the cries were too real to ignore. He walked toward the sound, and what he discovered tore his heart out of his chest. Alani laid, curled in a fetal position, beside the hole where her daughter's casket rested. It was still uncovered. The dirt hadn't even been thrown over it yet, and Alani refused to move. He felt like he had intruded on a private moment, but he had seen her now. He couldn't leave her there, not like this. He bent down and scooped her up, effortlessly in his arms. She had been lying there all day, unable to move, unable to go.
I can't leave her,
she whispered.
They haven't even come to cover her yet. Where are they?
She was irrational, panicked, and distraught.
Please, don't leave her in a wide open hole. She's my baby. She might get cold.
Okay.
He whispered. Alani had lost it, but he understood that grief rode a fine line between crazy and sane. He sat her down in one of the white wooden folding chairs that was left over from the service, and he removed his jacket and his diamond chains. Emotion cut at him, and he grabbed the shovel that sat propped in the pile of dirt. He was literally about to bury the little girl he had been responsible for killing, and it tore away at his conscience as he began to scoop dirt onto the grave. His arms burned as he grunted while gritting his teeth, every muscle in his body bulging as he filled the grave with dirt. Alani sat, watching, silent tears melting the makeup from her face as she dug her nails into her knees. Hours passed, and Ethic was covered in sweat and filth by the time he finished. He bent down over the now smooth dirt and placed one hand on top of it.
"God bless her soul, and have mercy on mine,"
he whispered, so only he could hear. Alani stood as he approached her.
"Can you hug me?"
She choked out the words, her chest jerking as her lip quivered uncontrollably.
"Like you did the other day, please,"
she begged. He obliged. He wrapped her in his arms so tightly that she felt his heart racing as they stood chest to chest.
"I can't say I'm sorry enough,"
he whispered. The sorrow of this woman was beautiful. Witnessing her immense grief was like watching a tragic opera, wrenching his heart and captivating him simultaneously.